Welcome to an episode of Black Girls Laughing across the country.
Yay! Across the country.
Oh, I feel like I should
add a new tagline or something.
Yeah. Eastern Mountain Time, Black Girls Laughing. That's what we are.
Eastern Mountain Time. Whatever that time is.
Oh my gosh, Mountain Time is weird. That's the one thing I haven't gotten used to, is being 2 hours behind everything. Because nothing is like set to Mountain Time. Nothing. No one cares about Mountain Time. I watch TV at 7 o'clock.
I was about to ask, what do you do for TV? It's 9 o'clock here, 7 o'clock there. That'd actually be nice because
you get to watch things.
Stay up late.
Exactly. I've been going to bed wicked early. The first night we went to bed at 9 o'clock. No lie. And woke up 11 hours later. We were just
oh my gosh.
We got up at 2 o'clock in the morning to take a 5 o'clock flight. So we were pretty zonked. We got there. We got to Colorado Springs at 10 a.m. and then just started our life. We're like, okay, now we live here.
That's still so crazy to me.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So if you guys, I don't know, didn't listen to the last episode or need to catch up, Brittany moved to Colorado Springs.
Woo!
And I'm in Philadelphia. So now we are recording Black Girls Laughing on Eastern Mountain Time. You pretty much get to be a part of our weekly friend catch-up, check-in, replay of our lives now.
Yeah, because we are, this is how this, I'm so happy that I'm doing this with you, because it's I'm such a person that likes to do things constructively, and I like constructive friendships, and this is the most constructive a friendship could ever be. So it will never die, because it's working.
It will never die. Because it's in our calendars. We have to do it. It's scheduled out every week.
It's so good. With Seamus, we've been chatting a lot over PlayStation, because we have headsets, and we Jordan and Seamus play Overwatch, and then I talk to Seamus while they're playing, and then I talk to Art while they're playing, and it's it's a phone, but it's just a headset.
Perfect.
I don't talk to anyone on the phone. It's only over the internet, guys. If you want to talk to me, hit me up on Skype. We'll make a podcast, or we'll play some game on PlayStation. And I'm all about the games right now, because that's what I do. I go to work and I play a video game. So.
Yeah, until you make new friends to replace me in person. Only in person.
Yeah,
though.
Only in
Not
person.
Not in spirit.
Never in spirit. These people are great. Colorado Springs people have been so nice and so warm so far. And I feel like I have some new friends very soon in my life. But they're never going to replace my BK. No.
Yay!
Okay.
So,
what's good with you, girl?
Still looking for a job. I'm in the final round of an interview for one right now that I'm really crossing my fingers for.
Cool.
Applied for a couple more. Keeping busy. I'm on a new advisory board with an arts organization here in Philly. I've been helping out a lot with the Asian Arts Initiative, which is an amazing space in Philadelphia. They focus a lot on artists of color, particularly and obviously Asian artists. They have this new gallery up that is a discussion on the culture between the Asian community and Black community, which is riddled with racism throughout all of time.
Please tell me about that. Because have you seen the gallery in the show right now?
Yeah, I got to see it when it was going up, and then I went to the opening reception, and it's beautiful. They have this one piece that's hoodies and hijabs, and it's a reflection
Ooh.
Of how people view a Black man in a hoodie and then a woman in a hijab, and it's photography. They're blown up pieces, and you can see the bags under their eyes and just staring into their eyeballs is like, it moves your whole soul. And it's really awesome that they take time to reflect on the awesome relationship that Black people and Asian people have had through their struggles, through being indentured mm-hmm. slaves or slaves in general, or how many times they've come together for the Harlem Renaissance and all these periods of beautiful art and beautiful creation. And it's like, God, like how white supremacy has just tricked so many people into thinking
that they have to grasp for whiteness instead of work together and exactly. instead of embracing each other. It's something, and like in the beautiful things that Black and Asian people have made together, they've also been discriminated against together. And
exactly.
Let's look at this Muslim travel ban right now. The people, like, something that we don't talk enough about is that of the seven countries, there are a number that are African countries. There are a number that are countries of Black people only. Somalia, Sudan, like, wake up. It's affecting a lot more people than just what you think of when you think of a Muslim if you're American.
Yeah. That's because nobody... Everyone's just so ignorant into thinking Muslim is one particular thing when Muslim... It's the biggest religion.
Mm-hmm.
It has the most people. Like, do you think all of those people are exactly the same? Hello? So it's an awesome exhibition. If anyone's listening and lives in Philly, you can go see it. Asian Arts is free to visit. Go check it out. And, you know, as I've been saying in multiple conversations now, white people are the minority in the relation of the whole world. So, like, once we all get our acts together and come together... No one will be able to stop us.
No,
and
it won't not
be
at
in
all.
My life. It won't be in my lifetime, but God, I hope in my grave I can like feel the coming together of all people of color to overtake the world, and I'll be cheering from the dirt.
My new job is fire. I'm absolutely excited. Love my job. I've never felt more suited for something in my life, like where I'm so in sync with like the philosophy of the organization. Like I knew about all the great things that they do for the clients that they work with, but I didn't really know like the true outcomes. And now that I have been behind the curtain and I can see the thing. So for listeners, if you don't know, like the company that the reason why I moved to Colorado Springs is for a new job. And the new job is still in the arts, but instead of in a nonprofit capacity, now I'm working in a for-profit capacity in the arts. And it's a completely different like orientation of the understanding of the business, but it's still very rooted in doing great service to the arts community and giving them great results so they can be doing what they're supposed to be doing forever and not have to worry about, you know, losing funding or the NEA going away because, you know, President Trump is trash and his administration is trash and it's going to ruin a lot of great things that we all love. But the company I work for is hopefully going to help organizations stay intact. And really do it and not like pretend do it the way that I felt like I was doing for the past 3.5 years. So no shade, but real shade. It's just really, really freaking great. And I love my coworkers already. They, at my job, they make you do Myers-Briggs test and,
oh yes.
There's also this thing called Strength Finder that helps you identify your 5 strengths. And mine was like ideation. So I'm like really good at creating new ideas and getting people excited about those ideas. Strategic, because duh, I'm ridiculously strategic. And includer. I like to make sure that everyone's included in the work that I do. duh. Like, everything I did at my old job was always about opening the door for other people to be a part of the conversation. I mean, I started the diversity and equity and inclusion group at my old job. So, of course. And just like a bunch of, there's like two other things that I can't remember right now. But it was just like, oh, I get this cool understanding of myself. And then I can look at this chart and see how everyone else's strengths and how and what their Myers-Briggs, you know, as I'm an ENTJ, so I know that my boss is an ENFJ and that the new hire is an INFJ, and like, how can we all work together? So it's just freaking cool.
Your boss is an ENFJ?
Yes.
Me too.
Oh, cool. I am on the cusp. So, and I think it's totally based off of the situation that I'm in. So when I took the test, that told me I was an ENTJ, but then this test that they use, you have to do like this learning portion that lets you understand which each sides are, and then you pick which thing sounds more like you. And during the learning portion, I was an ENFJ. Even though I test as an ENTJ, and since it was kind of low on the T, like I was on it, but it wasn't like completely firm like the E is. Like, I'm very extroverted. I'm firmly that. It was like kind of on the cusp, and so they let me choose. And so I decided to go with the test. And I totally think it's because I'm new in this space. I don't know these people that well. Like, I think they're great, but I don't know if I can truly trust them. So I'm thinking a little bit more than just feeling it out, because I don't know these whites. They're new. And, you know, once I trust them, then I'll become more of an F. But right now, T all the way.
T
as I sip my coffee.
Yeah, every time I take mine, it's weird that the thing that's slipping for me is the E part.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I'm like getting closer to being on the cusp of an E and an I. And I do recognize that in myself as I get older. And I always wonder, like, if I took it seasonally, would it be different based on like, or like my depression, or like even for me, because my hormones are so different, like, when I'm PMSing, like, would that even change my results? Like, how do you know? It changes all the time.
Yeah, and that's why you have to take that stuff with a little bit of a grain of salt. Like, it's definitely, like, circumstances outside feelings are going in outside. Damn, I can't think right now. But just, like, anything that's out of your control can completely change how you feel and how you interact with that situation. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'd be more of a T than an F in a group of a bunch of white people I don't really know yet either. I think that most people of color right now would be more T's than F's in groups of white people. So
yes.
As I previously stated, I'm no longer accepting new applications for new white people in my life right now.
Oh, no, they're only forced upon me at this point. Love them all right now. No one, like, everyone's on the good, they're all on the good white people list right now, but. Oh.
All right. So.
The John?
Yeah, I was going to say, should we move on from what's going on in our personal lives right now and talk about the world, I guess.
The terrible world.
Do we want to?
I mean, I've actually picked some like kind of nice things to talk about for the John. So I'm like, I'm not trying to go like too crazy and like on the sad tip, because like this is my first time seeing your face in like 2 weeks. So I'm like, let's not be terrible. But if you've got some sad things, I'm ready to talk, you know, resistance as much as anything. But I also have some black excellence I want to talk about, so.
I actually mostly picked only happy things, too, because I was like, everyone's talking about, we're all talking about it. Like, I don't want to can this be our space to not talk about it even for a moment? Yes.
Yeah. No. And like, let's, if we're going to talk about things, let's kind of make it a rule. If we talk about the Trump-tastrophe that is life right now, we only talk about how we're winning in the fight against it, or how asshat stupid they look at times, because that's good to laugh at.
Yeah, I love laughing at stupid.
Okay, great. So that's the rule, guys. Listeners, we are going to try to keep it only when we're beating them will we talk about them, and only when they're the most donkey stupid and funny. Okay, well, I'll start off the jack.
Yes.
So Harvard Law Review has its first black female editor. Oh my gosh. Like, one, 100 million years it took you to get a black woman to be running the Harvard Law Review doesn't make any sense. Like, Michelle Obama was there. So, like, what? How do you not have, how was she not it? But whatever. Barack was. It's okay. But this woman, Emelmi Umana, she's new, and she, what I love about her is that she recognizes some of the privileges that she has as an educated black woman, and how she did a internship as a public defender in Washington, D.C. in 2013. And she talks a lot about that experience and how that has really brought her to the law, and has really framed how she thinks about serving as a lawyer in the future. And she recognized, she's like, yeah, I'm woke. I read The New Jim Crow and Sister Citizen and the Killing of the Black Body. And I've watched all the documentaries that you're supposed to be watching. But when I went there and I started to work in the trenches, I recognized how far away I am from the understanding of what urban life is. Like, I do not know that. That is not my reality. And just because I'm black doesn't mean that I completely understand that reality. Think about that, Trump. Think about that, Ben Carson. Think about how far you are from what it means to be an urban black person. Quotations all meant, you guys can't see it, but BK can. that Carson is going to be the secretary of HUD and makes housing and urban development. And literally Trump said, I'm picking Ben Carson because, one, he's a black man that I know. And two, he lived in the projects once, so he knows what they're going to need, which doesn't make any sense. But this girl that is now in charge of the Harvard Law Review understands that there is that difference, that there is this uncomfortable squishiness between this idea of what urban blackness is and the reality for individual black people. Like, what, whoa, a concept. Yeah, I mean, what a freaking concept. But I'm excited for her. I'm excited to what she's going to bring to that post and to that publication and to the research and everything that's going to be coming out of the Law Review. And I'm excited for her career because she's going to be someone that's going to be slaying the world in the near future.
Slay, girl. Slay all day.
Yes. Emelmi Umana. Like, whoa. So what you got, girl?
So mine is kind of personal, not really like something you read in the news. I mean, we can talk about Beyonce being pregnant. I figured that's something we'd touch on. It's magical. It's perfect. If you don't think it's amazing, it is. It is the end. But I've been like finding really awesome things on the internet, and I also finished reading Misadventures of an Awkward Black Girl.
Ooh.
Which, like, you know, we've all watched Insecure because Issa Rae, obviously.
She's everything. I'm sad she did it. I was sad she did it with a Golden Globe, but I was so, so, so happy for Tracy Ellis Ross. Yes.
So I hadn't read the book, and I feel like, I don't know, people think that they can not read the book because they watch the show, but it's totally different.
I definitely need to read it.
I cried a few times while reading the book. It is me. It, like, from being a preteen and going on AOL and talking to strangers in chat rooms, like,
oh gosh, seeking, yes,
yeah, and, like, seeking validation from older men on the internet because you don't look like anyone around you, and people telling you you'd be cuter if you lost weight, to trying to be black enough, to trying to define your blackness, to, I mean, there were just so many things where I, like, was overwhelmed with tears, and they were happy tears. It was like, here, like, here's the book that I've been waiting for and looking for since forever. The person that made me realize, you know, growing up, even though we grew up in completely different parts of the world, I grew up in a really small town. Man, representation, just, like, there's really no word for how it feels to finally see yourself in someone else that you look up to.
Mm-hmm. It completely matters. It completely matters. And you don't recognize how universal your story is until you see someone else living it and owning that truth inside of the media, inside of this, the ultimate lens for us, right? For us in this day and age, media representation and being able to read stories and see yourself in multiple lenses. So through television, through the internet, through it all, has to exist. And it feels so good that we get to live in a time where we get to see ourselves.
Yep. So that's, like, my mushy John of, like, if you haven't read the book and you think that you can skip over reading the book because you watched Insecure, no, you can't. If anything, reading the book just adds to the experience of Insecure, and I want to go back and watch it again, having learned even more about her experience as a young girl and then seeing how she plays out her life in the show, with it being, like, a fictional autobiography, like, obviously things are exaggerated, but it's still so very much her. So, if anything, adding the two together and creating a marriage of all things Issa Rae just makes it all even more amazing, and love her even more, and, oh, I just want to meet her and, like, hold her hand for, like, a minute and just say thank you.
Yeah, and then just become best friends, because yeah. I feel like if I met her, I would be meeting a sister, like, a true sister that I didn't even know I needed and didn't know I had. She's everything. Yeah. I'm so excited for everything that she's doing. That show that's coming, that she's producing, we need to watch it.
Yeah, obviously. I've had so many people be like, can I binge watch that with you when it comes out? And I'm like, sure. Like, I end up having, like...
Girl, I wrote you first. I said, hey, we're watching this together.
You and multiple people. I had a couple
friends. Well, I don't care about those, like, other people. I don't care about those other people. I don't know them. Yeah. I said it first. We're watching it together. They can sit in the other room.
So that was my... I have another John, but that was my first one. My emotional one.
Okay, I have another one too. Sort of in the vein of representation matters and having these important conversations in the media. So Sundance was last week. And there was the Sundance Women in Film Luncheon that always happens. And women, black, white, Latino, everyone was there. And Jessica Williams. Oh, I love how brave she is. And I love how unafraid she is to speak her truth and to speak of the reality of being a black woman in Hollywood. And then, but then her adversary in this ended up being Selma Hayek, who, if you read, I really implore you to read the Hollywood Reporter article about this confrontation between Jessica Williams and Selma Hayek, because it just shows how like condescending Selma Hayek was in the questioning of Jessica Williams's truth, and then the need to push back at her explanation of her truth and her demonstration of what it means to be a black woman in Hollywood, and the tightrope between wanting to be your true self, but then also being what white men and white executives feel is a person of color. And they have the challenging questions that Selma Hayek was giving her was so rooted in a generational gap where, you know, people that see themselves as Gen Xers and also baby boomers, it's like, well, I fought really hard and I did this and nothing's going to be given to you, so you better just be ready to fight. And now people, millennials, are sort of like, why do we still have to fight? Why can't I just be recognized for how great I am? Why do I have to be still 3 times better than the white chick to get only a fraction of the fame and the glory? Why do I have to fight so much harder, tooth and nail, to get better representation of myself and have a greater choice of the characters that I get to pick and play? And I don't know, please read it. Shout out again. I think we talk about Jessica Williams as much as we talk about Issa Rae and how they are just slaying the game in, you know, representing for women of color our age.
Yeah, I like everyone always talks about, not everyone, I just recognize this narrative of older generations saying, on one hand, like, I fought so you could have this. And then turning around and saying, well, you have to fight for what you get. Like, what the F is the point of you fighting for me to have X, Y, and Z? And then turn around and I ask for X, Y, and Z. And you're like, oh, well, you have to fight. Mm-hmm. But then you want to tell me that you fought so I could have this. So why I still got to fight? I thought you did it for me.
Fight be retroactive and I can start where you ended and I can push it forward? Why do you feel like I have to take the same kicks to the face? You got those kicks to the face. Let me have bruised shins and let's move forward.
Yeah, like, why do we have to start from the same... We shouldn't be... No one should be starting from the same starting line.
Yeah.
This is a relay race. You should have passed the baton and I started further in than you did.
Because you know what? And then the obstacles... Keep going. Sorry.
I was going to say, and then the person I pass it to is closer to the finish line than I am. Great. Good. That's how the world is supposed to work. That's how progress happens. I shouldn't have to grab the baton, run the frick back to where you started, and then still try and get further than you did and pass it to the next person.
And there's
it don't
new...
work like that.
Mm-hmm. And there's new obstacles. The obstacles freaking change now. Yep, you had to go through the fire river. Now I have to climb this crazy wall of dead bodies, and I'm going to win in a different way. But like, it's a relay, but it's also a different obstacle course because the world changes. It shifts. New ideas of identity. New fights occur because we are recognizing and seeing the world in a completely different space. You know, let's think about just how feminism has changed over the course of the 30 years that I've almost been alive, and what it means, what it meant to be a feminist then, and now what intersectional feminism means today, means that the world has oriented and opened its eyes in a new way, and we recognize different problems, different ways that we're doing things wrong, and now we can fix them.
Yeah, I'm just... I'm over it.
Girl, me too.
I'm over it all. And the most kind of... Ugh. To sit in a room with someone younger than you, who's also a female, and call her baby is the most condescending thing you could do. Because that opens the door for men in particular to feel like they can talk to Jessica Williams any sort of way because another woman said it. So now I can talk to her in a condescending way. And thankfully, Jessica Williams, being the brave person she is, being like, no.
Yep.
She stayed a lot more calm than I did, because the second the word baby would have came out of Selma Hayek's mouth to me, I would have been like, excuse you?
Yeah, when I was reading the back and forth, I could feel her choice of words. I can feel her saying in her head, bitch, what you just say? And then saying, and then something completely different coming out of her mouth. But still, I can, even though I couldn't hear her speak it, I could feel the tone and the FU underneath her responses to Selma Hayek. And I was just like, thank you, Jessica Williams, for keeping it cute, keeping it so white people won't have crazy things to say about you, but then still keeping true to the message, true to your truth. Ugh. Queen. Yeah. Just queen. Just queen all day. The dopest of queens, Miss Jessica Williams.
Love her. So, in keeping in, you know, line with clapping back to just garbage, I stumbled on this awesome article. Well, there's a bunch of them now, about Zendaya or Zendaya. I've heard multiple pronunciations. I want to hear her say her name, so I know I'm not screwing it up. But there was this girl who was tweeting. You can find her at _illistc. Some dude came up in her mentions, like took two of her pictures and said, never trust a top half posting ass female. This girl's really pretty, but she's a big girl. She's like me. She's not tiny. She's not a twig, your whatever brainwashed idea of what beautiful is. She's big and beautiful. And, I mean, she posts selfies all the time, and I'm just, like, in love. But anyway, he tweeted that. I mean, she's so beautiful. So Zendaya saw that tweet. And she tweeted back, and she was like, stumbled across this stupid shit. She's fine as hell, head to toe, and guaranteed doesn't know you exist, my man. Ask for her, slay on, queen. And then she was like, can we find her at? I'd love her to be, what is Zendaya's clothing? Daya by Zendaya.
I didn't even know she had a clothing line.
Yeah, her clothing line, Daya by Zendaya model. The girl got signed by Zendaya to be a model.
Hey, girl. I just love it when crusty fools feel that they can say whatever they want because they're behind a freaking avatar, and they say dumb shit like women, like this one beautiful woman was beautiful for him. That she only exists for his critique. Get the hell out of here, dusty motherfucker. Go away. No one cares about your opinion. Go eat some Cheetos.
I'm making that meme face of that girl who, like, has her hand out with a really short ponytail. Are you all imagining the meme right now? Because I'm making that face of, like, Since when? Since when do I wake up and I'm like, the crusty dude on the corner, that's who I'm looking good for. That's who I'm existing for today.
Oh, sometimes I wish I had the confidence of a penis because it just gives too much confidence. So they just think that the world was made for them. They could be the crustiest, grossest man ever and still think that any woman walking down the street is theirs to comment on. I'm just like, nah, boo. Nah. Nah, you. Never. You ain't the one.
Never. Never. Ever. Even if I'm dating someone and I get dressed up nice and they're like, ooh, you look nice. Like, thank you, but I didn't look nice for you.
Mm-hmm.
If I look nice for you, I'll let you know. And chances of that happening are slim to it ain't.
You know it.
So that, I mean, let me tweet something and have someone come in my at so someone can sign me to do something cool. Please. Let that happen
yes.
to me.
Yes. Yeah. Trolls, come troll us and hopefully we can shine even more.
Yeah. Help us get on Viceland or something. Finally.
Dude. Oh my gosh. I was just talking. We don't get Viceland anymore, which makes me really sad because we had to get cable. No. So we had to get rid of Sling, and the cable package that we got, the guy lied to us and said that I was going to be able to have Viceland. But that was like the next package up. But whatever, it's okay. But it doesn't matter.
Why did you have to get cable?
Because it's cheaper to have internet with cable here.
Oh.
But we don't have Comcast, thank God. I don't support the evil empires.
Well, neither would I, but what? Hey, Verizon and Comcast.
Dude, they gave me a cell phone. My new job gave me an iPhone 6S.
For work?
Yep. Everyone gets a work cell phone.
You can FaceTime on two different phones.
Yes. I cannot wait to do the most with my phone. I was just like, what? The first day they gave me a phone. They're like, here you go. Here's your new number. And here's your phone. And thank you. And an awesome computer. And I was like, what? I get all of this? Everyone's jealous of me because I have a brand new computer. It's great. Anyways, random tangent back to the John. I saw that girl. Keep on glowing up, girl. But can we talk? Can we wrap up? First, Beyonce, beautiful black babies for Black History Month coming soon. So excited. Love her pictures. I want to have a photo shoot when I get pregnant because that will be very soon. I said that just to see your face go like that. Girl, it's going to be way off.
I think my mic just spiked. Think I hit red on that one.
No, but oh man, I want a baby. My cousin just had her baby yesterday, and I saw her pregnant before I came out to Colorado Springs, and I was just like, oh, I want one. I want to do this. But then seeing in turn Beyonce just slaying the beautiful baby bump, slaying motherhood, I just... Stop with that face. Anyways, but Beyonce, we can't wait for your babies. But I think everyone is probably like had overkill of the excitement over the new queens or queen and king or kings that are inside of her.
There's no such thing as overkill.
I've been having lots of people on the internet just claiming how much they don't care. And I'm like, you didn't have to do that. Now I know you care.
Care. Care.
Like, you really didn't have to do all of that. But then, can we just talk about black people are slaying the SAG Awards and all of these Oscar nominations, and we're having the opposite of Oscars so white, and it's exciting, but also... Oscars still suck because La La Land exists, but whatever.
All the way turned up. All the way turned up. That's how I feel about all the award shows right now. I'm just like, every day I read a new article and it's like, Viola Davis, black people nominated for the most everything. Black people nominated for the most all of this. First black woman nominated for the this, which is like,
yes,
how is that like, happening?
Yeah, because like, there's like in some of the technical categories, we have like the first black woman editor. It's like, yeah. Whoa, really? The first? 2017? What? How?
But how many woman editors are there in general, though?
I mean, that's the truth. That's the damn truth.
That are, like, allowed to get to the level of, like, a film like Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. They just...
Yeah, they are. They just have... Yeah, no. I mean, there's going to be more of them because... Our generation is now adults, and now we're finally getting to show out and be in the front. And there's a lot of, as we were going to theater school, and there was, you know, more representation at theater school from black people. There's more representation at film school too. I found out that my little cousin is going to, she's at BU now. Shout out Yasmeen. And she is studying film. And I was like, you go, girl. I had no idea you were going to do this. Make these films. Awesome.
Yes. Get your Ava DuVernay on, girl.
Exactly.
I can't wait to see her films.
Yes,
I can't wait.
These Yasmeen Jama originals. I cannot not Ooh, wait.
Ooh, that's
right? Beautiful
such
name,
a good...
right?
Girl, you better let me know when she releases something.
Oh, I'll be screaming. It'll be on everything. We'll be there. We'll do a Black Girls Laughing at one of her film premieres and interview her.
Yes. Yeah, I remember, I mean, it's only going to get more and more like that. I remember when Smash came out, really weird side note, but adds to the conversation, when Smash came out, more people started going to school for things like arts administration, which is like what we do. More people were taking that as a major in college.
Yeah.
More technical production, whether it's actually on stage or film production or things like that. So
I'm excited to see the new black musicals that are going to come out. Like, who's going to be the next Lin-Manuel Miranda after this world of Hamilton? Because, like, think about all these kids that never thought about writing a musical.
That are going to be
out
and
there.
And paper.
Like, ah, I cannot wait.
Like, we're living right now, and the next Hamilton is on paper somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's on paper.
I cannot wait.
Who wrote it? What if we know who wrote it? What if we secretly know who wrote it?
I mean, I know I have some people that write things that they think they are, but I'm sorry, boo, you're a white lady, so it's gonna be you. I love you guys, but I ain't talking about y'all.
No. No.
Oh, that was rude. I've been this low shade that I've been giving out on some folks in the past couple of weeks, and I've been loving it. But is that it for the Joan?
That's it for me.
Okay.
Hi, this is your producer, Jordan, and I goofed. We're still getting used to our new setup, and we lost about 15 minutes of Brittany's audio recording. We're going to pick up with Bee's giggle, and Brittany's microphone will come back a couple of minutes into the segment. Thanks for bearing with us.
So my giggle is in the vein of me. So if you guys don't follow me on social media, I just got a bunch of books written by black people for Christmas and a new tattoo. That's what I asked for Christmas, and that's what I got. I'm reading You Can't Touch My Hair and Other Things I Still Have to Talk About by Phoebe Robinson, which if you don't know Phoebe, She is one half of Two Dope Queens, the podcast with Jessica Williams, and she also has her own podcast, So Many White Guys, and she's also a stand-up comedian, and she's written for a lot of awesome magazines and online editorial and content and things like that. And she wrote this book. And I was expecting something similar of Awkward Black Girl. Misadventures of an Awkward Black Girl. And I do laugh when I read it. But I had a really good conversation with one of my friends who read it. And I'll just put this out there. Is one of my friends, she's a white girl that read this book. And she brought up a really interesting point that I noticed when I started reading it. And it's good, but it reads like it's supposed to be read by white people. So far, I'm not done with the book, but I guess coming off the tail end of Misadventures of an Awkward Black Girl, I read that book and being like, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's our experience. Kind of like, you know, Issa would have moments where she would like categorize black people, which obviously everyone doesn't fit into just one category, but it was like the awkward black, the hipster black, the nerdy black, the neo soul hotep, etc., etc. Like examples of the multiple complexities that are black people because we're not a monolith. But the more I started reading it after we had that conversation, the more I realized that Phoebe's book so far is written like that. Because she has this one section where she talks a lot about black hair. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, I already knew all of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that. Like, yeah, I know Erykah Badu's hair in a scarf or the beauty standards that Lauryn Hill cracked through along with her amazing talent, or like all of like Cicely Tyson and wearing her hair in braids instead of ironed out, or so I like the book and it makes me laugh, and Phoebe is funny. She's always been funny to me. I find her hysterical. I love the way she approaches heavy topics with like black comedy. I love black comedy. And black not in the sense of she's a black person,
but like dark comedy.
Yes, dark comedy. Clarifying that for people who think
they're like, okay, of course you like black comedy. You're a black girl.
No, like dark humor. But I'm kind of hoping that the book changes and I feel less like, well, this is stuff I already know.
I think
like, that even as a biracial girl with, quote, good hair, like, I've seen my cousins. I've had my hair braided. I've had my hair chemically relaxed. I grew up, my family's black, so, like, my friends are black, so this is, like, I'm black, so this is things I know about this.
Yeah, that's weird, but it kind of fits with my understanding of Phoebe Robinson as being, I think she very well recognizes her position in life as being a token. And so I feel like she's writing this book to the people that she has been a token for so long. And she's writing it directly to those people that have been in her circle or her understanding of white folk in that way. And so in contrast, you have Issa Rae, where she's writing to you and she's writing her book and you feel like you're in on the joke, instead of with Phoebe Robinson, she's explaining the joke to the people that don't know. And you're like, but I'm already five steps ahead of you because I'm black just like you.
Yeah. Part of me kind of wishes I would have maybe read them in a different order.
Mm-hmm.
maybe I would have had a different... No, because you know what? If my friend would have brought up that thing of like, did it read to you? Like, because she was like, it felt like I learned a lot from the book. She's like, but did you read it? Are you reading it and going, I already know this? And I'm like, actually, yes. And she's like, okay, because when you said you were reading it, she's like, the first thing that popped in my head was like, you probably already know all of this. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's great for me because I'm like, I know this, some of this offhand from my friends, but like this in-depth timeline of like understanding like black hair and popular culture from like forever ago.
Yeah.
From like the first black actors and actresses and music to 90s to now and natural hair. She learned a lot, but I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's like orienting it for the white people that she connects with that might not already get this exact same content from someone like Francesca Ramsey. You know?
Or their friends.
Yeah. But it's like,
since they have one black friend or whatever, you know, people say.
Yeah, white people have .5 black friends each. And black people have like 7 each. White friends each. Oh, we're doing too much work. We're too many white people. That's why we don't need new ones. I went to this, so there was the Sunday after I moved here. So a week after I moved here, I went to a resistance work thing. So we all came together and we wrote postcards and stuff. And it was ran by this reverend who also is a professor at Colorado College here in Colorado Springs. And she put it down like how you, she was like really explaining how some people, how you're not, to the white people, how you are not black people's friends if you haven't been to their house and eaten a meal with them, or if you haven't gone to their church, their place of worship, where they can go be ugly and vulnerable. You are not their friend. And I was like, sitting around looking at all the white people, I was like, damn, she told you, you ain't friends. You ready? you ready to become friends with some people?
Y'all ain't friends.
Oh.
That's so very true.
It's so true. It's the most true. So yes, if you got to be, you get to come to my house in Philadelphia, you're my friend because I don't let lots of whites run into my house. And if you didn't get an invite, now you know.
Well.
Okay, so I have a roar, and it kind of dovetails off of your Zendaya John, because it's another young black millennial media icon who I think is slaying.
Kiki Palmer?
No, fuck Kiki Palmer. No, I mean, Kiki Palmer's all right, but she's not my fave of the youths in Hollywood. Of the youths in Hollywood, I am screaming for Yara Shahidi or Zoe on Blackish. She is my roar. Yeah. Because that girl is everything. Because, like, first off, her character on Blackish is the embodiment of, like, cool black teenage girl who's just, like, slaying it today. Like, she's not just beautiful, but she's also skilled and ambitious and woke, while also being, you know, a bit vain and not exactly like a brainiac or anything. She's like still a full flawed, cool black girl. But then off the screen, she's like beyond more, even more awesome than her character on Blackish. She's like even more woke. She is just an activist. She's been talking about her biracial, black, Persian / Iranian U.S. citizen identity and what that means in this, you know, Trump America, you know, post-Muslim travel ban, what that is. She was she's been actively speaking out against this ban and really leaning into who her identity is and how the fact that if there was a ban like this back in the 80s, she would not be here today. Or the 90s, because she's a baby. She would not be here today. And then she's also, like, we also just cannot forget about her relationship with Teen Vogue. And you know how Teen Vogue is turning into, like, the black woman-led resistance leaders in the magazine world? I mean, they are the headquarters for the resistance. And she was anointed by their December cover as being a feminist icon with her best friend because of all of the work that she's doing of elevating women of color and young girls' voices. She directed a short film for Teen Vogue entitled We Are Girls, really owning what it means to be a millennial and really owning that narrative and creating that identity for the world to see. And she is at the center of it. The reason why I'm like really in love with her right now, like, or why I wanted to talk about her and just shout her out is that she has like this TED Talk style video that's like kind of that's gone a little viral, and it's like a minute and a half a portion of a larger TED Talk that she's doing that again piggybacks of what we've been talking about how important representation is in the media, and that if because of how few strong representations of people of color out there, black people, all people of color right now, we are an anomaly if we are amazing. Or we are just what we are expected if we do something terrible. Like, that's just the expectation for us. So we don't have any in between to be. We are either this unicorn of amazingness, or we are, well, yeah, black people ain't shit, so you ain't shit. And that's just the cycle that we live in because we don't have representation. And then so I saw that video and I started going in like that rabbit hole of watching all the videos that came on afterwards. I get in that cycle all the time on Facebook. And they had this amazing video of her and her mother. Her relationship with her mother. Her mother has shepherded her, is also an actress too, and has shepherded her daughter's relationship with Hollywood and helped her become the strong black woman that she could stand body in the characters, and having her have that strong will of like, we're not going to take some shit parts because it's an opportunity that some white producer wants to give us. We are going to pick the things that are going to allow us to be the truest to ourselves. Her mother was this beautiful dark-skinned woman with this beautiful curly natural hair, and she's like, the curls will always be here in every role I pick. I will always have these curls. I will never go against who I am just to fit inside of the box that you've created for me. And finally, if you didn't hear, Zoe is the character on Black-ish is about to get a different world treatment. She's going to have a spinoff.
What? I didn't know.
Yes. Yes, it's going to have a spinoff, and they're going to have like a backdoor pilot for it later this season of Black-ish. So we're going to see like where she's going off to school and like the beginning of what that world is going to be. And my dude, Larry Wilmore, is going to be the showrunner for it. He was the original showrunner for Black-ish, left to have his show on Comedy Central. And if you missed it, that got canceled, which is a shame because we need to have Larry Wilmore's voice right now because he was the most truthful, most truthful debate between of being able to see the bad of both Trump and Hillary side by side. You were only getting it from Larry Wilmore's show. And to have him not be in the media right now is just we have a chasm. We have this open this open space that we need to fill with his critiques. So I'm so happy he's going to be the showrunner for this show. Because, you know, Blackish has been killing it this past season with their very truthful, like, understanding of what it means to be a Black American in this world where people have just decided to be woke and they feel like they only know the struggle, that the struggle is new and hasn't been going on for, you know, how old is the country? 250 years.
The so, work is just beginning, people.
Yeah.
Those people.
Yeah, it's just day three for them, but, you know, everyone else has been on this struggle, on this march for a while. So, Yara, Shahidi, you're everything. Keep up the good work. I'm rooting for you. I'm roaring for you. You are the chick. Every Black girl, every girl, like, forget about just Black girl, every girl needs to be looking at her because she is the example of what it means to be a great millennial right now. Yeah.
I'm pumped for that spinoff.
Right? It's going to be good. And it just really cements where Blackish fits in our understanding of the world and how it how crucial it is, and its understanding of Blackness in America right now. Maybe like talking a lot about how each of the characters represents a different facet of Black identity. And like I'm really interested in seeing those college courses are going to be about Blackish in the future. And
yeah
I
mean, it's getting the Cosby treatment, which
yeah,
for like any show beloved by Black people is like all you can hope for.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not just beloved by Black people, it's a loved and beloved by a huge subsect of America that goes from white, Black, rich, poor, everything in between. So like I'm excited to see it grow. I feel like it's going to be on for, you know, 8 seasons at least.
Good.
Yeah. I hope, I mean, but you know, at the same time, television is turning into like white land at the same time. Cause, you know, I didn't bring this up in the John, but I dabble in watching the Today Show when I get to watch the Today Show. And I love Tamron Hall and Al Roker on the Today Show. And they had this hour that was like the Black hour. And now it's gone because they wanted to bring in freaking conservative ass Megyn Kelly. You know, Miss Santa Claus is a white man. That's a fact. Megyn Kelly.
Yep.
So angry. But anyways, we are only talking about good shit. We said it. I'm sorry I even brought it up. I can't wait to see what your next show, where you're going to go, Tamron Hall. Because that will be everything. And we'll talk about that once,
yes,
once someone gets you to sign something. Because you're too great for them not to recognize your shine.
And Al Roker, I can't believe they did you dirty like that.
Yeah, I'm sad. And I'm mad that he's not leaving NBC.
I know. He's going to stay. He probably gets paid so much money.
Yeah.
He's been there forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
Well, we'll see.
2017.
But I didn't know that Tamron Hall was the first Black anchor on the Today, woman anchor on the Today Show. I was like, what? It took them that long? And then I remember, yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I used to think that I can't even remember her name, even though she's like half like Japanese. I used to be like, oh, that's my person of color. That's my Black girl on that thing. Even though she wasn't. She was just Japanese.
You gotta get in where you fit in.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess we did it. Yeah, we did it. It's a show.
Our first Eastern Mountain Time Black Girls Laughing episode.
Yay! I'm so happy that we're doing this.
So, you can find us on the web, the interwebs, at BLK Girls Laughing with no G on Twitter and Instagram. On Facebook at facebook.com/blackgirlslaughing.
You can go to our website, blackgirlslaughing.com, and you can email us at blackgirlslaughing@gmail.com.
Woo!
Yay! Yeah, well, get ready, guys. I feel like our podcast, one, pop quiz for you, B. When did we record our first episode? What was the date?
It was February, I want to say, like, was it, I'm going to guess the 24th.
Wrong. We recorded our first episode on January 30th.
We recorded it then?
Yeah. It didn't come out until the end of February, but we recorded then the next week we recorded our next show. We did it on February 6th, which was the Super Bowl. So this is the anniversary of recording our second episode.
Holy
crap. And we talked about Beyonce.
When don't we talk about Beyonce, though?
I mean, Beyonce's been very important this past year. But I think not next week, but the week after, it will be our anniversary episode.
One whole year.
Yes. So, if there's anything you guys want to like talk about, like any moments that you liked about over the year of Black Girls Laughing that you want us to like highlight in our anniversary episode, please send us an email, DM us, let us know your favorite moments so we can share those with you too, and we can talk about them in that episode. So you got 2 weeks to email us or Instagram us or Facebook message us something about the show that you've been listening to for however long you've been listening to, but we're a year old soon.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Yeah. Let us know. Maybe we'll throw in like our favorite clip from a previous episode or throw in a moment. I know that I would love to hear a moment of when Brittany tried to do like 72 different types of laughs, and I probably sat across the table looking at her like she had 7 heads because that happened.
Like, giggle, cackle, roar! Yeah.
Stuff like that. Where if you could see my face right now, I'm just like, what?
Whatever. I'm corny, and I love it. I love how corny I can be. It's a privilege that I get to be corny.
All right, guys, we should end this.
Yeah. Well, we love you, B. I love you. I miss you like freaking crazy.
I miss you.
I really miss Philly.
No, you don't.
No, I really do. Like Philly's been doing some amazing stuff when it comes to resisting Trump. Yeah. And I've been really sad that I'm not there to be by your side, marching, you know, leading events, making this shit happen. And Philly, like, all eyes are on you guys. And you guys have been really taking a great stance. I love that that city so much.
Yeah, we don't get down. We don't get down with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Bye.
Bye. Mwah. Come on.